Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Monday morning to you. Thank you for being with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, hit me up on the text line. Jennifer Fiddler will be here, my state representative, here in about a half hour. Either she'll be here in person or over the phone. We haven't quite determined that yet, but either way is fine. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, Dale Jackson from WVNN and Yellowhammer News will make time for us. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, I'm trying to get these guys on as much as we can before the November 3rd election, which just seems like a long way away, but it'll be here before you know it. Carolyn Dobson, the Republican nominee for Secretary of State, will join us. So, will you please make sure you stick around for that? Once again, text line 251-343-0106. So the Democrat Civil War showing showing signs of it in ways weren't totally unanticipated. Just it finally is where. I said, particularly on the Sunday shows yesterday, obviously Republicans are standing over there on the sidelines pointing and talking about how terrible both sides are. So, some of these guys who are in states with sharing a ticket, if you will, with a DSA candidate. Now, here in Alabama, what's interesting about that, I guess Doug Jones, the Democrat candidate for governor, has made it a part of his stump speech that he's not one of those guys. That we disagree on just about everything. So he was speaking up in Marshall County over the weekend. I'll read you his quote here. I don't like the DSA platform. There are things like DSA folks want, like universal health care and all. It's just a question of how you get there. Everybody wants good health care. But getting there is a little bit crazy. And some of the stuff that I have seen is just unbelievable. So I am not a communist. I am not a socialist. I'm not crazy about the DSA platform at all. But I think they are still a small minority in this country, very small minority. So there you have it on that. Interesting that it's made it to Alabama now. And, now these guys are having to address some of this. And the candidates, I think these DSA candidates are trying to moderate. But they're winning elections. This is where the Democrat base is. And it's just not going to succeed in American politics necessarily. But this is you have to do this to win the Democrat nomination in a lot of places. I think when it gets to the general election, we can talk about it all we want, but most of the public's not really engaged in what color blue or what color red these candidates are. Most of them. So to me, that's just kind of interesting that now that it's made it to Alabama and it's come up and it showed up on Doug Jones' radar. What's he got to lose? But that's going to be his, I guess, calling guard. I'm not one of those guys. Do y'all believe him? 251-343-0106. What do you think his... I don't even know what his politics are on a lot of this. And I've interviewed him a handful of times. My perception of Doug Jones was always, and it turned out, you know, kind of like what Ron Sparks is right now. Just an old common sense, you know, Alabamian, whatever, trying to help people who need help. But over the years, he has gotten like defiantly anti-Trump, which is fine. That's what Democrats do. But this is supposed to be a different kind of Democrat. What do we think? There was a poll, a couple of weeks ago that showed Tuberville up only 7 points. I still think it's a 20-point race. If I'm handicapping it, I think it's 60-40. Maybe you could get it to, maybe you could get it to 15. Somewhere in that neighborhood. Just depends on like how things go, because Alabama's insulated from a lot of the national politics just because of its one-party state nature. But my sense of things is it's not so much that people are going to get out and vote for a Democrat. They're going to get out. They're just not going to get out and vote. Generally, his only path, his best shot to winning is somehow suppressing the Republican vote on November 3rd. And you know, there's too much on the ballot for that. It's not going to be like it was in December 2017. And that's where our gubernatorial election is. But I thought I'd pass that along. That we're already seeing Democrats kind of jump off this ship. And it's become like such a big topic as well. And then, you know, Fox News has just been hammering it. Every social media post, every YouTube clip, every crazy thing any of these people have said. And then, like, they go a step further and they really do a deep dive analysis into canceling Thanksgiving, abolishing the Senate, and all the kind of silly things that have been uttered by some of these Democrat candidates over the years. Well, that could never happen because you would have to change the Constitution. Okay, we know that. Question is it enough? As we have to... I think probably put more of a focus on affordability. Such a, that's a new word. It's like the word of the year here. Crude oil, let's see, is at $85.34 a barrel. It's still about 15 bucks too high. It gets to 90. That's the problem area, but it is trending down. It's just there is no... To be honest, there's just no light at the end of the tunnel in Iran. It is starting to feel like a forever war, but like when we have talk about forever wars, it's just kind of there in the background. You know it's there and you know what's going on, but life goes on. There's no, unless you have a loved one over there or you're serving in the military, it's not really impacting your day-to-day life unless, of course, at the gas pump. Are we going to become accustomed to this? Is this going to be kind of the new normal from here on out? And I, you know, like you start talking about the Democrat candidates as far as the presidential election goes, what are they going to do to wind this situation down? Just send a pallet of cash to Iran and hopefully they don't do anything to Israel with it. I don't know. What we hear from the Chris Van Hollen, who by the way, said he was kicking the tires on a presidential run. You don't know who he is. He's kind of a buffoon from Maryland. But what are they? They'll tell you how wrong Trump is, and that's fine. Like, okay, but you inherit the situation. What do you do with it? What should they do with it? What do we think that looks like? Maybe put the cart before the horse. Trump's still president. There's a lot he could do. But if you're a Democrat, how do you extricate the United States from the situation, I guess? Because that seems to be the linchpin to everything. If you ask me, it's this DSA stuff will pick back up in 2028 for sure. Because these guys are getting wins, they're showing and they're showing some support, and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in some of these early primary states. Especially Democrats move their primaries around, have taken Iowa off the docket. And that's a state that, like, Democrats do okay in. They got a shot at winning a Senate seat there. But then they move it to New Mexico, I think. South Carolina first. What is that? I can't even imagine what that looks like. 251-343-0106. Data centers are kind of slowly creeping back into the news. I was talking to somebody this morning about it. I mean, it really is like the populist issue. It's the people in power, the way it was described, people in power support these things and people out of power don't. The people in power, the people in charge, the people who win elections, for whatever reason, appear to be on the pro-data center side. And I saw some polling over the weekend. I think it's a Fox News poll. It's all over the board, but for the most part, the concerns are environmental. And it's kind of split evenly among just AI concerns, privacy concerns. But that's it. It's like, the justification doesn't matter, and we could debate the policy. It's kind of a losing issue. You can't run on these. Is there anywhere in this state, I wonder, that would welcome with open arms this kind of investment in their community? Because I think the way they got to approach it, and there's just a lot of like kind of astroturfy paid spokespeople pushing it, but the way they got to approach it, so you got to cut deals with these communities. Hey, if you let us put this here, we will in turn give you this, or we will put money toward this school or build this park or this golf course or whatever. To keep you happy. We'll put up a scoreboard at your youth baseball field. Like, they're going to want some kind of community investment, quote unquote. All right, if we get a deal with this eyesore, and I talked about this on Friday, what happens in 20 years to these things when we get more efficient with data storage? But that's back in the news. Flock cameras, I guess, are still out there, but not quite as prevalent. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. It's good to see you. I must go. I know I look a fright. Anyway, my eyes are not a cut. A ragged rebel flag flies high above it all. Popping in the they still smell the powder burning, and they probably always will. And on the old town.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. Yeah, it did. I guess this happened over Friday night or Saturday night. Fairhope Mayor Sherry Sullivan said they were canceling their meetings about a new municipal school system breaking away from Baldwin County. And let's see here. The ultra runner writes, in a Fairhope survey, 89% said they were satisfied with the Baldwin County Board of Education. That seems unbelievable. Nobody gets 90% approval these days. The Pope is sitting at 78%, and that's with Catholics who believe the Holy Spirit guides the actual selection of the Pope. What's going on in Fairhope? It was kind of like a poorly rolled out idea, I think. The idea itself will probably come back. And to tell you something, I think these cities on the Eastern Shore will ultimately have their own school system. It's gonna take us like one incident or something that's gonna trigger this discussion again. It's good leverage. The county doesn't want Fairhope to leave. It's such an important tax base for the county school system. So they're gonna make sure that. I would assume that they're going to make sure that Fairhope is taken care of. But on the other hand, if Daphne decides to walk away, then Fairhope inherits a lot of what walks away from Daphne or can't or isn't zoned in the city of. It just, at some point, they're gonna get enough support for this. I don't know. It may not be for 10, 20 years. Who knows? Someday, though. The discussion won't go away. And I think these surveys, I'll say this, that the samples weren't scientifically generated. They essentially put out questionnaires and asked interested parties to respond, and no one who was like pro really responded. It was mostly, I think, people on a couple of kind of levels that did not want the disruption, did not want to walk away from Baldwin County, and then B, probably a lot of people just worried about their taxes going up. Butter and I have made a comment a few weeks ago, get a little boutique casino on Twin Beach because the Fairhope city limits are crazy. And people in Fairhope do not want the city to grow, and it will have to if they make a city school system. They'll have to. Yeah, I think that's probably true. You do a municipal school system in Fairhope, and it's going to change the complexion of the city in a lot of different ways. That's a big step. Scroll read. How odd that bottled water wasting, frequent car washing, commoners are whining about data centers using up water. Selfie talk taking, live stream protests, doxing wacky heads are whining about those data centers and privacy with cameras. I know. Mike writes, $5.40 a gallon for diesel is an awesome personal sacrifice for our greatest ally in order for them to be able to bomb 1,500 year-old Christian sites and destroy 2,000-plus-year-old family homes and farms. Michael, you have made this clear where you're on this conflict. Jason! Good morning, Jeff. If old Doug for Bama thought the DSA angle played here, he'd be all for it. He has no soul. I don't know. I give him the benefit of the doubt on this. I just, I'm a little surprised that I'm a little surprised he's willing to talk about it like he is. And then Daniel writes, data centers are a must to run our phones. It's Facebook apps, flock cameras provide safety if you don't want to be tracked. Don't have a cell phone, a car, tax/license. It's the future. Get over it, people. Times are changing. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Singing song of the South. Sweet potato pie, and I shut my mouth. Gone.
to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning, 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me, and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that might be on your mind. Jennifer Fiddler, my state representative, will join us here in just a moment. I think she's en route, I'm told, so we're standing by for that. In the meantime, we can get to some more text here. Tim, City of Sim sent out a survey about starting its own school system. A lot of people voted in favor of starting the new school system, but an alarming percentage of the people were not in favor of any new taxes. That tells me that you've got a people that's voting for things that don't have enough sense to know what's going to cost you more money and new taxes to do it. These people probably don't even need to be voting in the first place if that's the case. Why? This is what it is. It's a barrier to entry, though. The whole deal with that is it takes money to start a new school system, but it shouldn't cost more in theory because it's presumably the same school, the same teachers or whatever, but they make it just kind of based on what it cost or whatever, they make it difficult to get in. And that's where the plus up comes. But the thing is, Tim, about this, that a lot of people want to keep the money in their own community. So Mobile County, for example, is a big, big county. If you live in Sims, why are Sims tax dollars going to a school in Grand Bay or, you know, whatever? And then I think that's where the philosophy, the reasoning comes. Joining us now, she has made it. We're always appreciative of her time, but State Representative Jennifer Fiddler is here with us. Representative, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you doing?
Doing well. Well, what you been up to? It's been a while.
Oh, it has been a while. Well, lately, I've been a little bit under the weather. I had a minor surgery this past week, and so a minor surgery on my eyes, so I'm, you know.
We're rocking the shades today.
Rocking the shades, but it's all good, and I have been listening intently to our constituents regarding the school debate and conversation. And I have to say, I'm so proud of, all the people that have voiced their opinion, true Fairhope style, I would say, just because, you're going to hear what's on your mind. And it's, so I've appreciated that input.
Sounds like it's dead for now, though, or at least.
But the conversation, I think it does, I was listening to a little bit, on the way here. It does surface every, I've been, working for the city of Fairhope. I worked for the city of Fairhope since 2001. And we had those conversations, 26 years ago regarding that. And there was a lot of changes made. It's probably how the Fairhope Education Foundation was formed, which has put hundreds of thousands of dollars, community dollars into our school system to help pay for these resource teachers that we have in the school systems. The tax that we've collected on the Eastern Shore, that millage tax, that extra millage tax that goes and helps our schools over here. So the conversation has been had and for years, and there's been so many things that have been done, money raised to help our kids and to provide more resources for them here in Fairhope and along the Eastern Shore. So this was interesting, because we've done so well. I mean, the Baldwin County schools have done so well. It was interesting to hear some of those comments like, okay, what's broke? But we've had the conversation for years. I mean, so it just feels like it just comes up every so often.
It doesn't sound like it's a conversation like that there's necessarily something wrong with the status quo. It's more like kind of looking forward, looking at like kind of the general community, like I said, keeping some of the money that is raised here that it could probably be done better, but do people, is it the juice worth the squeeze, I guess?
Well, and I mean, I guess to respond a little bit to that, we do that statewide. I mean, we collect income tax, we collect sales tax, we collect this revenue statewide, and we have to reimburse, we have to put it back out throughout the state because we have much poorer areas than other areas. We right. happen to be in this area that at one time was just like any other area in this state. So are we going to, you know, pump up, we're going to...
Well, is it wealth redistribution or is it, you know, like...
But we've had to do that. I mean, well, throughout this state.
Sure, yeah, you're right. It's happened in the past. Does that make it right necessarily? You know, is that the best for the people who live in this municipality?
I mean, I get that, but at the same time, this is what we've done for like so... we look at this whole state of Alabama. This was a very rural area. So if we would have had that attitude 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, Baldwin County would have never gotten extra money because Birmingham would have gotten all the money in that one particular spot. This is how like government works. I mean, you take the revenue, you tax everyone, and then you do have to redistribute it out to where so that everybody is equally got somewhat of an equal amount of money coming in to be able to educate our kids.
I guess it's this. If the money's distributed equally, some places are doing better with it than others. Some people, some local governments, county or city, are having better results. So I guess the question is, like, then we're paying into this system. We seem to be doing better than the rest of the county. We're leading the way. Should the people who live in Fairhope be paid for new school buildings in Perdido or Little River or wherever?
Well, again, I mean, we're doing
a better job with it. I guess we're a more responsible steward of the money.
But we have a higher millage tax here. So we're able to, in the Eastern Shore School District, we are collecting, you know, this higher millage tax. I can't remember what it is. I'm sorry. But, I mean, we're collecting that across the Eastern Shore. So we'll have more resources put in our classroom. That's why we're doing better. I mean, that's one reason. And then the Fairhope Education Enrichment Foundation has been in existence for years, and they have great fundraisers. The community has given of their time. They've put that money into the schools. I mean, that's why we're heads and shoulders right now above everybody. But you pull away, what do we do with our kids that are right outside? This is, I mean, it may be dead for now, but this is an important conversation that we need to have because you think about the children in Barnwell, and are they going to annex into the city so they can go to the Fairhope City school system? Or are they going to have that parent that lives out there in Barnwell and Timbuktu, because that's the only place they can afford to be able to live, and ask them to, or tell them, the lowest of our socioeconomic, to go over there and drive 20 miles or 30 miles to get to their nearest school because they can't, the walls are built up over here in Fairhope and we're not going to allow them to come in.
I mean, what happens here is, what if Daphne says, all right, we're going to go do our own municipal school system, and then those who don't live within the city limits, they are looking for a home. Some will go to Spanish Fork, some That's maybe right. to Robertsdale. You get this influx into Fairhope. Then what?
Well, and I think about the burden that's going to be on our road infrastructure. More people on the roads.
Right.
They're driving by a city school. They're driving by the closest school. They're driving by where their colleagues go to church. And, you know, everybody goes to church over here, but they're inside the city limits, so we're going to drive on by. And
but you understand, like, a lot of these municipalities, I assume that people are kind of, whoever's pushing this idea is looking at it, we could be like Vestavia, we could be like Mountain Brook, we could be like Madison, we can be elite relative to our local area, That's going to push up property values, going to raise more tax revenue. It's going to do a lot of things. That's where it's coming from. Now, if Fairhope doesn't do it, but some other place gets on this bandwagon and does it themselves, then we stand to be burdened by that. That's the Elliott argument. Like, you need to take that into consideration.
And I mean, there's a lot of good people that are out there, you know, pushing this. And I think just in that, it's a really good conversation, a great conversation. And it can be a hard conversation because there's a lot of this passion on both sides.
Let me ask you just one more question on it, and we can move on to something else. But having a big school system, I mean, the Baldwin County school system is big, and this isn't like a big metropolitan area. It's not like Mobile. It's big, and people, there is a yearning for more local or more, you know, compact, more of a say, where it's not just funding, it's not just resources, but the ability to control your own destiny. Do you really want a school board member elected from some other part of the county and not have control of your own city system here when you look at the governance of it?
I don't know. Maybe we should change. Look at that. Maybe that's something that we should. Because I see that. It makes sense.
Like a countywide. This is a behemoth of a county, but you know, it's just kind of very different from one place to another. It's not as tribal as the state, I would say, but it does have its own distinct communities with the different ideas about what the right thing to do is.
Yeah. It does. But, I mean, we've had a school board member here from Fairhope that's done a tremendous job for years. That's very approachable and has been very active in our school system. So I know that's changing, but just hadn't been an issue just because we've had that a great representation from the Eastern Shore on the school board.
Joined by State Representative Jennifer Fiddler here on the program. I bet you're getting blown up about flock cameras lately.
I've been hearing a lot about flock cameras.
How well versed are you on the flock camera discussion?
I mean, I know we've had them for a while. The police and law enforcement, they use them in some areas of the state. I've really noticed how they've used them to catch really some big criminals. So that data, you know, I'm with the people that, and I understand and get it, that because I appreciate the privacy aspect, absolutely. What we do with that data, I think needs to be, like, if it's for law enforcement, that's fine. You know, I've seen some things where, you know, erase the data every week or so, every 7 days.
Right.
That's interesting, but is it actually erased? You know,
like, how do you enforce that? How do you make sure that they're living up to the standard of the law, right?
Yeah. I mean, so those would be questions, but I mean, because the law enforcement is going to be 100% for them to be able to solve a lot of these crimes. And then how do you balance that with our privacy that, you know, if you put a vote on it, you know, people would probably say, no, you know, I want my privacy. Don't be collecting my data. Then I have to agree with that. So, you know, they've got to have some sort of balance, you know, for law enforcement criminals, that sort of thing, trying to dive into that and actually solve these investigations. And, you know, when they're investigating these fraudulent type activities.
Well, I guess this was Senator Elliott talking about it on Friday. There are no guardrails. There are no, like, there's no defined standard. It's sort of the Wild West right now, and that it maybe you could be for it, but maybe you put in some parameters to say you got to delete the data after a certain amount of time. You can use them here or for this and not for that. And then there's got to be protections in place to make sure they're not abused. And if they are, there has to be some kind of liability or some kind of penalty for that.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I think you do have to have guardrails if we're going to use it for, you know, and like I said, you know, the law enforcement's reached out to me, so they're absolutely for it. You know, how we, what's that balance?
It does come off as a kind of a populist issue. There's no one out there, yay, flock cameras, except for law enforcement. So, like, I just, Senator Orr, he tried this last, the quadrennium before last, to do something on this. Will something ever get done? I think it comes back up, but it's just not clear where the entire body is, the entire chamber is on this. But this seems to be a very, very populist issue. It's like what a lot of the texters on this show want to talk about, that and data centers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and I get it. Because inherently it just sounds wrong. You're collecting data. You got my license plate information. It's pretty scary. You can track my every movement. Then it's wrong.
Well, then the other thing is, driving is a privilege. It's not a right. And the way Senator Orr explained it is like, well, if you're a private company, there's no expectation of privacy. That, you know, if a private company wanted to set up a camera on its private property and monitor license plates, then it could do so. It's not a question if it's legal. It's a question as if, is this something really you want your government to be doing on a regular basis?
Yeah, you're on, I guess when I start thinking about that, I think, okay, you're on rights of way. You're driving on a public right of way that you've paid taxes, you helped pay, you know, for these improvements out there, and it's everybody's property. It's not just, you know, so where are your rights on that?
And then it's the expectation of privacy, and there's no expectation of privacy if you're driving down Section Street with your license plate in your vehicle. That's, you're out in the open. So it's not something where it doesn't seem like it's a warrantless sort of surveillance, but it is surveillance. But it's just, you know, if they were bugging this office and listening in on our conversations, that would be one thing. There's an expectation of privacy. There's no expectation of privacy out on the city street.
Yeah. And then this reminds me, just of you saying that, what the illegality of the audio recorders inside the courthouse. Do you remember that when that happened? And so that is a public, it was a public building, but there were, there were devices in there that actually was listening, and you're in a public building. So that was wrong, though.
Hold that fault. We're way long here. We got to get a break in here. Check the clock. 251-343-0106. We'll pick up your text on the other side. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Monday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Just a minute or two left here with State Representative Jennifer Fidler. Higher Ed Partnership down in Destin, you attended. Any grand takeaways there?
Yeah, I did that a couple of weeks ago, Jeff. I was invited down, and the Higher Ed Education Partnership, is the executive director is Gordon Stone, and he puts together this conference every year, and a lot of the students and the student government associations through our four-year universities that we as a state publicly fund come together every year, and they meet with many legislators. There was about, I guess, 15 or 20 of us down there. I was just honored to be asked to go. But we get to, the students will, like, have a little couple days of classes, and they kind of figure out questions they want to ask their legislator about things that they see that are issues. One of the issues that they have is that they're concerned about how to fund higher education, you know, four-year universities, and making sure that the kids, students are able to attend college. And
all right.
But if there's ideas out there to help do that.
Representative, we appreciate your time. We'll pick it up again in a couple of weeks, but thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. Y'all have a great day.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Everybody.